corridors to meet the first of the Brown's guards, who already had out their swords.
"Sound the alarm!"
Yabu shouted.
"Ninja! There are ninja among the servants!"
One samurai fled for the main staircase. The second rushed forward bravely to stand alone at the top of the winding steps that led below, sword raised. Seeing him, the servants came to a halt, then, moaning with terror, blindly huddled into the stones, their arms over their heads. Yabu ran on toward the main doorway and through it to stand on the steps.
"Sound the alarm! We're under attack!"
he shouted, as he had agreed to do, to signal the diversion outside, which would cover the main attack through the secret door into the audience chamber, to kidnap Mariko and hurry her away before anyone was wiser. Samurai on the gates and in the forecourt whirled around, not knowing where to guard, and at that moment the raiders in the garden swarmed out of their hiding places and engulfed the Browns outside. Yabu retreated into the foyer as other Browns came rushing down from the guardroom above to support the men outside. A captain raced up to him.
"What's going on?" "Ninja, outside and among the servants. Where's Sumiyori?" "I don't know. In his room."
Yabu leapt for the stairs as other men poured down. At that moment, the first of the ninja from the cellars dashed past the servants to the attack. Barbed shuriken disposed of the lone defender. Spears killed the servants. Then this force of raiders was in the main corridor, creating a violent shouting diversion, the milling frantic Browns not knowing where the next attack would spring from. On the top floor, the waiting ninja had ripped open their doors at the first alarm and rushed the last of the Browns, who were hurrying below, killing them. With poison darts and shuriken, the ninja pressed their onslaught. The Browns were quickly overwhelmed, and the attackers jumped over the corpses to reach the main corridor on the floor below. A furious charge of Brown reinforcements was repulsed by the ninja, who whirled their weighted chains and cast them at the samurai, either strangling them or entangling their swords to make it easier to impale them with a double-edged knife. Shuriken flashed through the air, and the Browns here were decimated. A few ninja were cut down, but they crawled on like rabid animals and stopped attacking only when death took them completely. In the garden, the first rush of the defending reinforcements was easily thwarted as Browns poured from the main doorway. But another wave of Browns courageously mounted a second charge and swept the invaders back by sheer force of numbers. At a shouted order, the raiders retreated, their jet-black clothes making them difficult targets. Exultantly, the Browns rushed after them, into ambush, and were slaughtered. The red spot attackers were still lying in wait outside the audience room, their leader's eye to the spyhole. He could see the anxious Browns and Blackthorn's greys, who were guarding the fortified door to the corridor, listening anxiously to the mounting holocaust below. The door opened, and other guards, Browns and greys, crowded the opening, and then, no longer able to stand the waiting, officers of both groups ordered all their men out of the audience room to take up defensive positions at the far end of the corridor. Now the way was clear, the door of the inner corridor open, only the captain of Grey's beside it, and he also was leaving. The red spot leader saw a woman hurry up to the threshold, the tall barbarian with her, and he recognized his prey, other women collecting behind them. Impatient to complete the mission and so relieve the pressure on his clansmen below, and whipped by his killing lust, the red spot leader gave the signal and burst through his door an instant too soon. Blackthorn saw him coming and automatically drew his pistol from under his kimono and fired. The back of the leader's head disappeared, momentarily stopping the charge. Simultaneously, the captain of Greys rushed back and attacked with a mindless ferocity and cut down one ninja. Then the pack fell on the Grey and he died, but these few seconds gave Blackthorn enough time to pull Mariko to safety and slam the door. Frantically, he grabbed the iron bar and slid it into place just as ninja hurled themselves against it and others fanned out to hold the main doorway.
"Christ Jesus! What's go... Ninja!"
Mariko shouted, as Kiri and Lady Suzuko and Lady Etz and Chimoko and Achiko and the other maids poured hysterically from their rooms, blows hammering on the door.
"Quick! This way!"
Kiri screamed over the uproar and fled into the interior. The women followed, helter-skelter, two of them helping old Lady Ertz. Blackthorn saw the door rocking under the furious blows of the assault Jimmies. Now the wood was splintering. Blackthorn ran back into his room for his powder horn and swords. In the audience room, the ninja had already disposed of the six browns and greys at the main outer door, and had overwhelmed the rest in the corridor beyond. But they had lost two dead, and two were wounded before the fight was complete. The outer doors closed and barred, and this whole section secure.
"Hurry up!"
the new Red Spot leader snarled. The men with the crowbars needed no urging as they ripped at the door. For a moment, the leader stood over the corpse of his brother, then kicked it furiously, knowing his brother's impatience had destroyed their surprise attack. He rejoined his men, who circled the door. In the corridor, Blackthorn was reloading rapidly, the door shrieking under the blows.
"First, the powder. Tamp it carefully."
One of the door panels cracked.
"Next, the paper plug, to hold the charge tight. And next, the lead ball, and another plug."
One of the door hinges snapped, and the tip of the jimmy came through.
"Next, blow the dust carefully away from the flint."
"Anjin-san,"
Mariko cried out from somewhere in the inner rooms.
"Hurry!"
But Blackthorn paid no attention. He walked up to the door and put the nozzle to a splintered crack, stomach high, and pulled the trigger. From the other side of the door, there was a scream, and the assault on the door ceased. He retreated and began to reload.
"First powder. Tap it carefully."
Again the whole door shook as men tore at it with shoulders and raging fists and feet and weapons.
"Next the holding paper, and next the ball, and next another paper."
The door bellowed and shuddered, and one of the bolts sprang away and clattered to the floor. Kiri was hurrying down an inner passageway, gasping for breath, the others half-dragging Lady Etz with them, Sazuko crying,
"What's the point? There's nowhere to go!"
But Kiri ran on, stumbling into another room and across it, and she pulled a section of the shoji wall aside. A hidden iron-fortified door was set into the stone wall beyond. She pulled it open. The hinges were well-oiled.
This is my master's secret haven,"
she panted, and started to go inside, but stopped.
"Where's Mariko?"
Jimiko turned and rushed back. In the first corridor, Blackthorn blew the dust carefully away from the flint and walked forward again. The door was near collapsing, but still offered cover. Again he pulled the trigger. Again a scream and a moment's respite. Then the blows commenced, another bolt flew off, and the whole door teetered. He began to reload.
"Anjin-san!"
Mariko was there at the far end, beckoning him frantically, so he snatched up his weapons and rushed toward her. She turned and fled, guiding him. The door shattered, and the ninja tore after them. Mariko was running fast, Blackthorn on her heels. She sped across a room, tripped over her skirts, and fell. He grabbed her up, and together they bolted across another room. Chimiko ran to them.
"Hurry!"
she shrieked, waiting for them to pass. She followed for a moment, then, unnoticed, she turned back and stood in the path, her knife out. Ninja came rushing into the room. Chimiko hurled herself, knife outstretched, at the first man. He parried the blow and flung her aside like a toy, charging after Blackthorn and Mariko. The last man broke Chimiko's neck with his foot and rushed on. Mariko was running fast, but not fast enough, her skirts inhibiting her, Blackthorn trying to help. They crossed the room, then turned right into another, and he saw the doorway, Kiri and Sazuko waiting there terrified, Achiko and maids succoring the old woman in the room behind them. He shoved Mariko to safety. Then he turned at bay, his uncharged pistol in one hand, sword in the other, expecting Chimiko. When she didn't appear at once, he began to go back, but heard the approaching charge of the ninja. He stopped and leaped backward into the room as the first ninja appeared. He slammed the door, and spears and shuriken screeched off the iron. Again, he barely had time to shove the bolts home before the attackers hurtled against it. Numbly, he thanked God for their escape, and then, when he saw the strength of the door and knew that Jimmies could not break it easily and that they were safe for the moment, he thanked God again. Trying to catch his breath, he looked around. Madoka was on her knees, gulping for air. There were six maids, Achiko, Kiri, and Suzuko, and the old lady, who lay grey-faced, almost unconscious. The room was small and stone-walled, and another side door let out onto a small battlement veranda. He groped over to a window and looked out. This corner abutment overhung the avenue and forecourt, and he could hear sounds of the battle wafting up from below, screams and shouts, and a few hysterical battle cries. Several greys and unattached samurai were already beginning to collect in the avenue and on the opposite battlements. The gates below were locked against them and held by the ninja.
"What the hell's going on?"
Blackthorn said, his chest aching. No one answered him, and he went back and knelt beside Mariko and shook her gently.
"What's going on?"
But she could not answer yet. Yabu was running down a wide corridor in the west wing toward his sleeping quarters. He turned a corner and skidded to a stop. Ahead, a large number of samurai were being pressed back by a ferocious counterattack of raiders who had rushed down from the top floor.
"What's going on?"
Yabu shouted over the din, for no raiders were supposed to be here, only below.
"They're all over us," a samurai panted. "These came from above."
Yabu cursed, realizing he had been duped and not told the whole of the attack plan.
"Where's Sumiyori?"
"He must be dead. They've overwhelmed that section, sir. You were lucky to escape yourself. They must have struck shortly after you left. What a ninja attacking for?"
A flurry of shouts distracted them. At the far end, Browns launched another counterattack around a corner, covering samurai who fought with spears. The spearmen drove the ninja back, and the Browns charged in pursuit. But a cloud of shuriken enveloped this wave, and soon they were screaming and dying, blocking the passageway, the poison convulsing them. Momentarily, the rest of the Browns retreated out of range to regroup. Yabu, unendangered, shouted,
"Get bowmen!"
Men rushed off to obey.
"What's the attack all about? Why are they in force?"
the samurai asked again, blood streaking his face from a cheek wound. Normally, the detested ninja attacked singly or in small groups, to vanish as quickly as they appeared once their mission was accomplished.
"I don't know,"
Yabu said, this whole section of the castle now in uproar, the Browns still uncoordinated, still off balance from the terrifying swiftness of the onslaught.
If Torunaga-sama were here, I could understand Ishido ordering a sudden attack, but why now?"
the samurai said.
"There's no one or nothing."
He stopped as the realization struck him.
"Lady Toda!"
Yabu tried to override him, but the man bellowed,
"They're after her, Yabu-san! They must be after Lady Toda!"
He led a rush for the east wing. Yabu hesitated, then followed. To get to the east wing, they had to cross the central landing that the ninja now held in strength. Samurai dead were everywhere. Goaded by the knowledge that their revered leader was in danger, the first impetuous charge broke through the cordon. But these men were cut down swiftly. Now more of their comrades had taken up the shouts, and the news spread rapidly, and the Browns redoubled their efforts. Yabu rushed up to direct the fight, staying in safety as much as he dared. A ninja ripped open his haversack and lit a fused gourd from a wall flare and hurled it over the Browns. It shattered against a wall and exploded, scattering fire and smoke. And at once this ninja led a counterattack that threw the Browns into a burning, disordered rout. Under cover of the smoke, ninja reinforcements poured out from the floor below.
"Retreat and regroup!"
Yabu shouted in one of the corridors leading off the main landing, wanting to delay as much as he dared, presuming that Mariko was already captured and being carried to the cellar escape below, expecting at any moment the overdue clarion call that signaled success, and ordered all ninja to break off the attack and retreat. Then a force of Browns from above hurtled in a suicidal attack from a staircase and broke the cordon. They died, but others also disobeyed Yabu and charged. More bombs were thrown, setting fire to the wall hangings. Flames began to lick the walls, sparks ignited the tatamis. A sudden gush of fire trapped one of the ninja, turning him into a screaming human torch. Then a samurai's kimono caught, and he threw himself onto another ninja, and they burned together. A blazing samurai was using his sword like a battle axe to cut a way through the ambushes. 10 samurai followed, and though 2 died in their tracks and 3 fell mortally wounded, the rest broke out and tore for the east wing. Soon another 10 followed. Yabu led the next charge safely as the remaining ninja made an orderly retreat to the ground floor and their escape route below. The battle for possession of the cul-de-sac in the east wing began. In the small room, they were staring at the door. They could hear the attackers scraping at the hinges and at the floor. Then there was a sudden hammering and a harsh, muffled voice from outside. 2 of the maids began to sob.
"What did he say?"
Blackthorn asked. Mariko licked her dry lips.
He said to open the door and surrender, or he'd blow it up.
Can they do that, Mariko-san?
I don't know. They can use gunpowder, of course, and...
Mariko's hand went to her sash, but came out empty.
Where's my knife?
All the women went for their daggers. Kiri had none, Suzuko none, nor Achiko or Lady Etz. Blackthorn had armed his pistol and had his longsword. His short sword had fallen during his frantic dash for safety. The muffled voice became angrier and more demanding, and all eyes in the room looked at Blackthorn. But Mariko knew she was betrayed, and her time had come.
He said, "If we open the door and surrender, everyone will go free except you."
Mariko brushed a strand of hair out of her eyes.
"He said they want you as a hostage, Anjin-san. That's all they want."
Blackthorn walked forward to open the door, but Mariko stood pathetically in his way.
"No, Anjin-san, it's a trick," she said. "So sorry. They don't want you. They want me. Don't believe them. I don't believe them."
He smiled at her and touched her briefly and reached for one of the bolts.
"It's not you. It's me. It's a trick. I swear it. Don't believe them, please," she said,
and grabbed his sword. It was half out of its scabbard before he realized what she was doing and had caught her hand.
"No," he ordered. "Stop it!
Don't give me into their hands! I've no knife! Please, Anjin-san!"
She tried to fight out of his grasp, but he lifted her out of the way and put his hand on the top bolt.
"Dozo,"
he said to the others, as Mariko desperately tried to stop him. Achiko came forward, pleading with her, and Mariko tried to push her away and cried out,
"Please, Anjin-san! It's a trick! For the love of God!"
His hand jerked the top bolt open.
"They want me alive!"
Mariko shouted wildly.
"Don't you see? To capture me, don't you see? They want me alive, and then it's all for nothing. Tomorrow Toranaga's got to cross the border. I beg you, it's a trick before God!"
Achiko had her arms around Mariko, pleading with her, pulling her away, and she motioned him to open the door.
"Isogi! Isogi, Anjin-san!"
Blackthorn opened the central bolt.
"For the love of God, don't make all the dying useless. Help me. Remember your vow."
Now the reality of what she was saying reached him, and in panic, he shoved home the bolts.
"Why should?"
A ferocious pounding on the door interrupted him, iron clanging on iron. Then the voice began, a short, violent crescendo. All sound outside ceased. The women fled for the far wall and cowered against it.
"Get away from the door!"
Mariko shouted, rushing after them.
"He's going to explode the door!"
"Delay him, Mariko-san,"
Blackthorn said, and leaped for the side door that led to the battlements.
"Our men'll be here soon. Work the bolts. Say they're stuck. Anything."
He strained at the top bolt on the side door, but it was rusted tight. Obediently, Mariko ran to the door and pretended feeble attempts to shift the central bolt, pleading with the ninja outside. Then she began to rattle the lower bolt. Again the voice, more insistent, and Mariko redoubled her weeping pleas. Blackthorn smashed the butt of his hand against the top catch again and again, but it would not shift. The women watched helplessly. Finally, this bolt clanged open noisily. Mariko tried to cover the sound, and Blackthorn attacked the final bolt. His hands were raw and bloody now. The ninja leader outside renewed his fiery warning. In desperation, Blackthorn grabbed his sword and used the haft as a cudgel, careless of the noise now. Mariko drowned the sounds as best she could. The bolt seemed welded shut. Outside the door, the Red Spot leader was almost mad with rage. This secret refuge was totally unexpected. His orders from the clan leader were to capture Toda Mariko alive, make sure she was weaponless, and hand her over to Greys, who were waiting at the end of the tunnel from the cellars. He knew that time was running out. He could hear the raging battle in the corridor outside the audience room, and knew disgustedly that they would have been safe below, their mission accomplished, but for this secret rat-hole and his over-anxious fool of a brother who had begun the rush prematurely.
Karma to have such a brother!
He held a lighted candle in his hand, and he had laid a trail of powder to the small kegs they had brought in their haversacks to blow up the secret entrance to the cellars to secure their retreat. But he was in a dilemma. To blow the door was the only way to get through. But the Toda woman was just on the other side of the door, and the explosion would surely kill everyone inside and spoil his mission, making all their losses futile. Footsteps raced toward him. It was one of his own men.
"Be quick," the man whispered. "We can't hold them off much longer."
He raced away. The Red Spot leader decided. He waved his men to cover and shouted a warning through the door.
"Get away! I'm blowing the door!"
He put the candle to the trail and jumped to safety. The powder spluttered, caught, and snaked for the kegs. Blackthorn yanked the side door open. Sweet night air rushed in. The women poured onto the veranda. Old Lady Etz fell, but he caught her and pushed her through, whirled for Mariko, but she had pressed back against the iron and called out firmly,
"I, Toda Mariko, protest this shameful attack, and by my death..."
He lunged for her, but the explosion blew him aside as the door wrenched loose from its hinges and blasted into the room and shrieked off a far wall. The detonation knocked Kiri and the others off their feet outside on the battlement, but they were mostly unhurt. Smoke gushed into the room, the ninja following instantly. The buckled iron door came to rest in a corner. The Red Spot leader was on his knees beside Mariko as others fanned out protectively. He saw at once that she was broken and dying fast.
"Karma,"
he thought, and jumped to his feet again. Blackthorn was lying stunned, a trickle of blood seeping from his ears and nose, trying to grope back into life. His pistol, bent and useless, was in a corner. The Red Spot leader went forward a pace and stopped. Achiko moved into the doorway. The ninja looked at her, recognizing her. Then he stared down at Blackthorn, despising him for the gun and the cowardice in shooting blindly through the door, killing one of his men and wounding another. He looked back at Achiko and reached for his knife. She charged blindly. His knife took her in the left breast. She was dead as she crumpled, and he went forward without anger and withdrew his knife from the twitching body, fulfilling the last part of his orders from above. He presumed from Ishido, though it could never be proved, that if they failed and the Lady Toda managed to kill herself, he was to leave her untouched and not take her head. He was to protect the barbarian and leave all the other women unharmed, except for Kiyama Achiko. He did not know why he had been ordered to kill her, but it had been ordered and paid for, so she was dead. He signaled the retreat. One of his men put a curved horn to his lips and blew a strident call that echoed through the castle and through the night. The leader made a last check on Mariko, a last check on the girl, and a last check on the barbarian he wanted dead so much. Then he turned on his heel and led the retreat through the rooms and passageways into the audience room. Ninja defending the main doorway waited till all the Red Spot raiders were through the escape route. Then they hurled more smoke and firebombs into the corridor and rushed for safety. The leader of the Red Spots covered them. He waited until all were safe, then scattered handfuls of hardly noticeable deadly caltrops on the floor, small spiked metal balls tipped with poison. He fled as Browns burst through the smoke into the audience room. Some charged after him, and another phalanx hurtled for the corridor. His pursuers screamed as the caltrop needles ripped into the soles of their feet, and they began to die. In the small room, the only sound was Blackthorn's lungs struggling for air. On the battlement, Kiri lurched to her feet, her kimono torn and her hands and arms raw with abrasions. She stumbled back and saw Achiko and cried out, then reeled for Mariko and sank to her knees beside her. Another explosion somewhere in the castle rocked the dust a fraction, and there were more screams and distant shouts of fire. Smoke billowed into the room. Suzuka and some of the maids got to their feet. Suzuka was bruised about the face and shoulders, and her wrist was broken. She saw Achiko, eyes and mouth open in death terror, and she whimpered. Numbly, Kiri looked across at her and motioned at Blackthorn. The young girl stumbled toward Kiri and saw Mariko. She began to cry. Then she got control of herself and went back to Blackthorn and tried to help him up. Maids rushed to assist her. He held onto them and fought to his feet, then swayed and fell, coughing and retching, the blood still oozing from his ears. Browns burst into the room. They looked around, aghast. Kiri stayed on her knees beside Mariko. A samurai lifted her up. Others crowded around. They parted as Yabu came into the room, his face ashen. When he saw Blackthorn was still alive, much of his anxiety left him.
"Get a doctor! Quick!"
he ordered, and knelt beside Mariko. She was still alive, but fading rapidly. Her face was hardly touched, but her body was terribly mutilated. Yabu ripped off his kimono and covered her to the neck.
"Hurry the doctor!"
he rasped, then went over to Blackthorn. He helped him sit against the wall.
"Anjin-san! Anjin-san!"
Blackthorn was still in shock, his ears ringing, eyes hardly seeing, his face a mass of bruises and powder burns. Then his eyes cleared, and he saw Yabu, the image twisting drunkenly, the smell of gun smoke choking him, and he didn't know where he was or who he was, only that he was aboard ship in battle, and his ship was hurt and needed him. Then he saw Mariko, and he remembered. He lurched up, Yabu helping him, and tottered over to her. She seemed at peace, sleeping. He knelt heavily and moved the kimono aside. Then he put it back again. Her pulse was almost imperceptible. Then it ceased. He stayed looking at her, swaying, almost falling. Then a doctor was there, and the doctor shook his head and said something, but Blackthorn could not hear or understand. He only knew that death had come to her, and that he too was dead. He made the sign of the cross over her and said the sacred Latin words that were necessary to bless her, and he prayed for her, though no sound came from his mouth. The others watched him. When he had done what he had to do, he fought to his feet again and stood upright. Then his head seemed to burst with red and purple light, and he collapsed. Kind hands caught him and helped him to the floor and let him rest.
"Is she dead?"
Yabu asked.
"Almost. I don't know about his ears, Yabu-sama," the doctor said. "He may be bleeding inside."
The samurai said nervously,
"We'd better hurry. Get them out of here. The fire may spread and we'll be trapped."
"Yes,"
Yabu said. Another samurai called him urgently from the battlements, and he went outside. Old Lady Etz was lying against the battlement, cradled by her maid, her face grey, eyes rheumy. She peered up at Yabu, focusing with difficulty.
"Kashigi, Yabu-san?"
"Yes, lady."
"Are you senior officer here?"
"Yes, lady."
The old woman said to the maid,
"Please help me up."
"But you should wait. The doc..."
"Help me up."
Samurai on the battlement veranda watched her stand, supported by the maid.
"Listen,"
she said, her voice hoarse and frail in the silence.
"I, Maeda Etz, wife of Maeda Arinoshi, lord of Nagato, Iwami, and Aki, I attest that Toda Mariko-sama cast away her life to save herself from dishonorable capture by these hideous
and shameful men. I attest that Kiyama Achiko chose to attack the ninja, casting away her life rather than risk the dishonor of being captured. That but for the barbarian samurai's bravery, Lady Toda would have been captured and dishonored, and all of us. And we who are alive owe him gratitude, and also our lords owe him gratitude for protecting us from that shame. I accuse the Lord General Ishido of mounting this dishonorable attack, and of betraying the heir and the Lady Ochiba.
The old lady wavered and almost fell, and the maid sobbed and held her more strongly.
And Lord Ishido has betrayed them and the Council of Regents. I ask you all to bear witness that I can no longer live with this shame. No, no, mistress,
the maid wept.
I won't let you. Go away. Kashigi Yabu-san, please help me. Go away, woman.
Yabu took Lady Etsu's weight, which was negligible, and ordered the maid away. She obeyed. Lady Etsu was in great pain and breathing heavily.
I attest to the truth of this by my own death,
she said in a small voice and looked up at Yabu.
I would be honored if you would be my second. Please help me onto the battlements.
No, lady. There's no need to die.
She turned her face away from the others and whispered to him.
I'm dying already, Yabu-san. I'm pleading from inside. Something's broken inside. The explosion. Help me to do my duty. I'm old and useless, and pain's been my bedfellow for 20 years. Let my death also help our master, Ne.
There was a glint in her old eyes.
Ne.
Gently he lifted her and stood proudly beside her on the abutment, the forecourt far below. He helped her to stand. Everyone bowed to her.
I have told the truth. I attest to it by my death,
she said, standing alone, her voice quavering. Then she closed her eyes thankfully and let herself fall forward to welcome death. Chapter 58. The regents were meeting in the great room on the second level of the donjon. Ishido, Kiyama, Zataki, Ito, and Onoshi. The dawn sun cast long shadows, and the smell of fire still hung heavy in the air. Lady Ochiba was present, also greatly perturbed.
So sorry, Lord General, I disagree,
Kiyama was saying in his tight, brittle voice.
It's impossible to dismiss Lady Toda's seppuku, and my granddaughter's bravery, and Lady Maeda's testimony and formal death, along with 147 Toranaga dead, and that part of the castle almost gutted. It just can't be dismissed.
I agree,
Zataki said. He had arrived yesterday morning from Takato, and when he had the details of Mariko's confrontation with Ishido, he had been secretly delighted.
If she'd been allowed to go yesterday as I advised, we wouldn't be in this snare now. It's not as serious as you think.
Ishido's mouth was a hard line, and Ochiba loathed him at that moment. Loathed him for failing, and for trapping them all in this crisis.
The ninja were only after loot, Ishido said. The barbarian is loot?
Kiyama scoffed.
They'd mount such a vast attack for one barbarian?
Why not? He could be ransomed, ne?
Ishido stared back at the daimyo, who was flanked by Ito Terozumi and Zataki.
Christians in Nagasaki would pay highly for him, dead or alive, ne?
That's possible,
Zataki agreed.
That's the way barbarians fight.
Kiyama said tightly.
Are you suggesting, formally, that Christians planned and paid for this foul attack? I said it was possible, and it is possible.
Yes, but unlikely, Ishido interposed, not wanting the precarious balance of the regents wrecked by an open quarrel now. He was still apoplectic that spies had not forewarned him about Torunaga's secret lair, and still did not understand how it could have been constructed with such secrecy and not a breath of rumor about it.
I suggest ninja were after loot. That's very sensible and most correct, Ito said, with a malicious glint in his eyes.
He was a small, middle-aged man, resplendently attired with ornamental swords, even though he had been routed out of bed, like all of them. He was made up like a woman, and his teeth were blackened.
Yes, Lord General, but perhaps the ninja didn't mean to ransom him in Nagasaki, but in Edo, to Lord Torunaga. Isn't he still his lackey?
Ishido's brow darkened at the mention of the name.
I agree we should spend our time discussing Lord Torunaga and not Ninja. Probably he ordered the attack, nay? He's treacherous enough to do that. No, he'd never use Ninja,
Sataki said.
Treachery, yes, but not those filth. Merchants would do that. Or barbarians. Not Lord Torunaga.
Kiyama watched Sataki, hating him.
Our Portuguese friends could not, would not, instigate such an interference in our affairs. Never. Would you believe they, and or their priests, would conspire with one of the Christian Kyushu daimyos to war on non-Christians? The war supported by a foreign invasion? Oh, tell me, do you have proof? Not yet, Lord Kiyama. But the rumors are still there, and one day I'll get proof.
Sataki turned back to Ishido.
What can we do about this attack? What's the way out of the dilemma?
He asked, then glanced at Ochiba. She was watching Kiyama, then her eyes moved to Ishido, then back to Kiyama again, and he had never seen her more desirable. Kiyama said,
We're all agreed. It's evident Lord Torunaga plotted that we should be snared by Toda Mariko-sama. However brave she was, however duty-bound and honorable, God have mercy on her.
Ito adjusted a fold in the skirts of his impeccable kimono.
But don't you agree? This would be a perfect stratagem for Lord Torunaga, to attack his own vassals like that. Oh, Lord Sataki, I know he'd never use ninja, but he is very clever at getting others to take his ideas and believe them as their own, eh? Anything's possible. But ninja wouldn't be like him. He's too clever to use them, or get anyone to do that. They're not to be trusted. And why force Mariko-sama? Far better to wait and let us make the mistake. We were trapped, ne? Yes, we're still trapped.
Kiyama looked at Ishido.
And whoever ordered the attack was a fool, and did us no service. Perhaps the Lord General's correct. That it's not as serious as we think, Ito said. But so sad. Not an elegant death for her, poor lady. That was her karma, and we're not trapped.
Ishido stared back at Kiyama.
It was fortunate she had that bolt hole to run to. Otherwise those vermin would have captured her. But they didn't capture her, Lord General, and she committed a form of seppuku, and so did the others. And now, if we don't let everyone go, there'll be more protest deaths, and we cannot afford that,
Kiyama said.
I don't agree. Everyone should stay here, at least until Torunaga-sama crosses into our domains.
Ito smiled.
That will be a memorable day. You don't think he will? Sataki asked. What I think has no value, Lord Sataki. We'll soon know what he's going to do. Whatever it is makes no difference. Torunaga must die if the heir is to inherit.
Ito looked at Ishido.
Is the barbarian dead yet, Lord General?
Ishido shook his head and watched Kiyama.
It would be bad luck for him to die now, or to be maimed, A brave man like that, ne? I think he's a plague, and the sooner he dies, the better. Have you forgotten? He could be useful to us. I agree with Lord Zateki. And you. Torunaga's no fool. There's got to be a good reason for Torunaga's cherishing him, ne? Yes, you're right again, Ito said. The Anjin-san did well for a barbarian, didn't he? Torunaga was right to make him samurai.
He looked at Ochibo.
When he gave you the flower, lady, I thought that was a poetic gesture worthy of a courtier.
There was general agreement.
What about the poetry competition now, lady?
Ito asked.
It should be cancelled. So sorry,
Ochibo said.
Yes,
Kiyama agreed.
Had you decided on your entry, sire?
She asked.
No, he answered. But now I could say, on a withered branch, the tempest fell. Dark summer's tears. Let it be her epitaph.
She was samurai, Ito said quietly.
I share this summer's tears.
For me, Ochiba said, for me, I would have preferred a different ending. On a withered branch, the snow listened. Winter's silence. But I agree, Lord Ito. I too think we will all share in this dark summer's tears.
No, so sorry, lady, but you're wrong, Ishido said. There will be tears, all right, but Torunaga and his allies will shed them.
He began to bring the meeting to a close.
I'll start an inquiry into the ninja attack at once. I doubt if we'll ever discover the truth. Meanwhile, for security and personal safety, all passes will regretfully be cancelled, and everyone regretfully forbidden to leave until the 22nd day.
No.
Onoshi the leper, the last of the regents, said from his lonely place across the room where he lay unseen, behind the opaque curtains of his litter.
So sorry, but that's exactly what you can't do. Now you must let everyone go. Everyone.
Why?
Anoshi's voice was malevolent and unafraid.
If you don't, you dishonor the bravest lady in the realm. You dishonor the Lady Kiyama Achiko and the Lady Maida. God have mercy on their souls. When this filthy act is common knowledge, only God the Father knows what damage it will cause the heir. And all of us, if we're not careful.
Ochiba felt a chill rush through her. A year ago, when Onoshi had come to pay his respects to the dying Taiko, the guards had insisted the litter curtains be opened, in case Onoshi had weapons concealed. And she had seen the ravaged half-face, noseless, earless, scabbed, the burning fanatic eyes, the stump of the left hand, and the good right hand grasping the short stabbing sword. Lady Ochiba prayed that neither she nor Yeomon would ever catch leprosy. She, too, wanted an end to this conference, for she had decided now what to do. What to do about Torunaga, and what to do about Ishido.
Second, Onoshi was saying, if you use this filthy attack as an excuse to hold anyone here, you imply you never intended to let them go, even though you gave them your solemn written undertaking. Third, you...
Ishido interrupted.
The whole council agreed to issue the safe conduct.
So sorry. The whole council agreed to the wise suggestion of the Lady Ochiba to offer safe conduct, presuming with her that few would take advantage of the opportunity to leave. And even if they did, delays would occur.
You suggest Torunaga's women and Toda Mariko wouldn't have left, and that others wouldn't have followed?
What happened to those women wouldn't swerve Lord Torunaga a jot from his purpose. We've got to worry about our allies. Without the ninja attack and the three seppukus, this whole nonsense would have been stillborn.
I don't agree.
Third and last, if you don't let everyone go now, after what Lady Et said publicly,
You'll be convicted by most daimyos of ordering the attack, though not publicly, and we all risk the same fate. And then there'll be lots of tears. I don't need to rely on Ninja. Of course.
Anoshi agreed, his voice poisonous.
Neither do I, nor does anyone here. But I feel it is my duty to remind you that there are 264 daimyos, that the air strength lies on a coalition of perhaps 200. And that the heir cannot afford to have you, his most loyal standard-bearer and commander-in-chief, presumed guilty of such filthy methods and such monstrous inefficiency as the attack failed.
You say I ordered that attack?
Of course not. So sorry. I merely said you will be convicted by default if you don't let everyone leave.
Is there anyone here who thinks I ordered it?
No one challenged Ishido openly. There was no proof. Correctly, he had not consulted them, and had talked only in vague innuendos, even to Kiyama and Ochiba. But they all knew, and all were equally furious, that he had had the stupidity to fail. All except Zataki. Even so, Ishido was still master of Osaka, and governor of the Taiko's treasure. So he could not be touched or removed.
Good, Ishido said with finality. The ninja were after loot. We'll vote on the safe conducts. I vote they be cancelled.
I disagree, Zataki said. So sorry, I oppose also, said Anoshi.
Ito reddened under their scrutiny.
I have to agree with Lord Onoshi at the same time. Well, it's all very difficult, ne?
Vote,
Ishido said grimly.
I agree with you, Lord General.
Kiyama said,
So sorry, I don't.
Good,
Anoshi said.
That's settled. But I agree with you, Lord General. We've other pressing problems. We have to know what Lord Toranaga will do now. What's your opinion?
Ishido was staring at Kiyama, his face set. Then he said,
What's your answer to that?
Kiyama was trying to clear his head of all his hates and fears and worries, to make a final choice. Ishido or Toranaga? This had to be the time. He remembered vividly Mariko talking about Onoshi's supposed treachery, about Ishido's supposed betrayal, and Toranaga's supposed proof of that betrayal, about the barbarian and his ship. And about what might happen to the heir and the church if Toranaga dominated the land, and what might happen to their law if the Holy Fathers dominated the land. And overlaying that was the Father Visitor's anguish about the heretic and his ship, and what would happen if the black ship was lost, and the Captain General's God-sworn conviction that the Anjinsan was Satan spawned, Mariko bewitched as the Rodriguez was bewitched.
Poor Mariko, he thought sadly. To die like that, after so much suffering, without absolution, without last rites, without a priest, to spend eternity away from God's sweet heavenly grace. Madonna have mercy on her. So many summer's tears. And what about Achigo? Did the ninja leader single her out, or was that just another killing? How brave she was to charge, and not to cringe, poor child. Why is the barbarian still alive? Why didn't the ninja kill him? They should have been ordered to, if this filthy attack was conceived by Ishido, as of course it must have been. Shameful of Ishido to fail, disgusting to fail. Ah, but what courage Mariko had. How clever she was to ensnare us in her courageous web. And the barbarian. If I'd been he, I would never have been able to delay the ninja with so much courage, or to protect Mariko from the hideous shame of capture. And Kiritsubo, and Suzuko, and the Lady Etz, yes, and even Achigo. But for him and the secret sanctuary, Lady Mariko would have been captured. And all of them. It's my samurai duty to honor the Anjinsan for being samurai. Ne? God forgive me. I did not go to Mariko-chan to be her second, which was my Christian duty. The heretic helped her and lifted her up as the Christ Jesus helped others and lifted them up. But I forsook her. Who's the Christian? I don't know. Even so, he has to die.
What about Toranaga, Lord Kiyama? Ishido said again. What about the enemy? What about the Kanto?
Kiyama asked, watching him.
When Toranaga's destroyed, I propose that the Kanto be given to one of the regents.
Which regent?
You?
Ishido answered blandly, then added,
Or perhaps Zateki, Lord of Shinano?
This Kiyama thought wise, for Zateki was needed very much while Toranaga was alive, and Ishido had already told him, a month ago, that Zateki had demanded the Kanto as payment for opposing Toranaga. Together they had agreed Ishido should promise it to him, both knowing this to be an empty promise. Both were agreed Zateki should forfeit his life and his province for such impertinence, as soon as convenient.
Of course, I'm hardly the right choice for that honor,
Kiyama said, carefully assessing who in the room were for him and who against. Anoshi tried to conceal his disapproval.
That suggestion's certainly a valuable one, worthy of discussion, eh? But that's for the future. What's the present Lord of the Kanto going to do now?
Ishido was still looking at Kiyama.
Well?
Kiyama felt Zateki's hostility, though nothing showed on his enemy's face.
Two against me, he thought, and Ochiba, but she has no vote. Ito will always vote with Ishido, so I win, if Ishido means what he says. Does he?
He asked himself, studying the hard face in front of him, probing for the truth. Then he decided, and he said openly what he had concluded.
Lord Toranaga will never come to Osaka.
Good,
Ishido said.
Then he's isolated, outlawed, and the imperial invitation to commit seppuku is already prepared for the exalted signature. And that's the end of Toranaga and all his line. Forever.
Yes, if the Son of Heaven comes to Osaka.
What?
I agree with Lord Ito,
Kiyama continued, preferring him as an ally and not an enemy.
Lord Toranaga is the wiliest of men. I think he's even cunning enough to stop the Exalted's arrival.
Impossible!
What if the visit's postponed?
Kiyama asked, suddenly enjoying Ishido's discomfort, detesting him for failing.
The Son of Heaven will be here as planned.
And if the Son of Heaven isn't?
I tell you, he will be.
And if he isn't?
Lady Ochiba asked,
How could Lord Toranaga do that?
I don't know. But if the Exalted wanted his visit delayed for a month, there's nothing we could do. Isn't Lord Toranaga a past master at subversion? I'd put nothing past him, even subverting the Son of Heaven.
There was dead silence in the room. The enormity of that thought and its repercussions enveloped them.
Please excuse me, but what's the answer then?
Ochiba spoke for them all.
War,
Kiyama said.
We mobilize today, secretly. We wait until the visit's postponed, as it will be. That's our signal that Toranaga has subverted the Most High. The same day we march against the Kanto, during the rainy season.
Suddenly the floor began to quiver. The first earthquake was slight and lasted only for a few moments, but it made the timbers cry out. Now there was another tremor, stronger. A fissure ripped up a stone wall and stopped. Dust pattered down from the rafters. Joists and beams and tiles shrieked, and tiles scattered off a roof and pitched into the forecourt below. Ochiba felt faint and nauseous, and she wondered if it was her karma to be buried in the rubble today. She hung on to the trembling floor and waited with everyone in the castle and with all the city and the ships in the harbor for the real shock to come. But it did not come. The quake ended. Life began again. The joy of living rushed back into them, and their laughter echoed through the castle. Everyone seemed to know that this time, for this hour, for this day, the Holocaust would pass them by.
Shigata ganai,
Ishido said, still convulsed.
Nay?
Yes, Ochiba said gloriously.
Let's vote,
Ishido said, relishing his existence.
I vote for war.
And I.
And I.
And I.
And I.
When Blackthorn regained consciousness, he knew that Mariko was dead, and he knew how she had died and why she had died. She was lying on futons, greys guarding him, a raftered ceiling overhead, dazzling sunshine hurting him, the silence weird. The doctor was studying him. The first of his great fears left him.
I can see.
The doctor smiled and said something, but Blackthorn could not hear him. He started to get up, but a blinding pain set off a violent ringing in his ears. The acrid taste of gunpowder was still in his mouth, and his entire body was hurting. For a moment, he lost consciousness again. Then he felt gentle hands lift his head and put a cup to his lips, and the bittersweet tang of the jasmine-scented herb char took away the taste of gunpowder. He forced his eyes open. Again the doctor said something, and again he could not hear, and again terror began to well. But he stopped it, his mind remembering the explosion and seeing her dead, and before she had died, giving her an absolution he was not qualified to give. Deliberately he pushed that memory away, and made himself dwell on the other explosion, the time he was blown overboard after old Alban Caradoc had lost his legs. That time he had also had the same ringing in his ears, and the same pain and soundlessness, but his hearing had returned after a few days.
There's no need to worry, he told himself. Not yet.
He could see the length of the sun's shadows and the colour of the light.
It's a little after dawn, he thought,
and bless God again that his sight was undamaged. He saw the doctor's lips move, but no sound came through the ringing turbulence. Carefully he felt his face and mouth and jaws.
No pain there, and no wounds.
Next, his throat and arms and chest.
No wounds yet.
Now he willed his hands lower, over his loins, to his manhood. But he was not mutilated there, as Alban Caradoc had been, and he blessed God that he had not been harmed there and left alive to know, as poor Alban Caradoc had known. He rested a moment, his head aching abominably. Then he felt his legs and feet. Everything seemed all right. Cautiously, he put his hands over his ears and pressed, then half opened his mouth and swallowed and half yawned to try to clear his ears. But this only increased the pain.
You will wait a day and half a day, he ordered himself, and 10 times that time if need be, and until then, you will not be afraid.
The doctor touched him, his lips moving.
Can't hear. So sorry,
Blackthorn said calmly, hearing his words only in his head. The doctor nodded and spoke again. Now Blackthorn read on the man's lips,
I understand. Please sleep now.
But Blackthorn knew that he would not sleep. He had to plan. He had to get up and leave Osaka and go to Nagasaki, to get gunners and seamen to take the black ship. There was nothing more to think about, nothing more to remember. There was no more reason to play at being samurai or Japanese. Now he was released. All debts and friendships were cancelled. Because she was gone. Again he lifted his head and again the blinding pain. He dominated it and sat up. The room spun, and he vaguely remembered that in his dreams he had been back at Anjiro in the earthquake when the earth had twisted and he leaped into it to save Toranaga and her from being swallowed by the earth. He could still feel the cold, clammy wetness and smell the death stench coming from the fissure. Toranaga huge and monstrous and laughing in his dream. He forced his eyes to see. The room stopped spinning and the nausea passed.
Ja, dozo,
he said, the taste of gunpowder back again. Hands helped him to drink, and then he held out his arms and they helped him to stand. Without them, he would have fallen. His body was one great hurt, but now he was sure that nothing was broken inside or out, except his ears, and that rest and massage and time would cure him. He thanked God again that he was not blinded or mutilated, and left alive.